you guys. Book review time once again. Here's another one that was in my pile from a long time ago that I read probably back in the late 90s or early 2000s. You know, just a paperback that I bought from back then. And I remembered it being like pretty good, so I wanted to do a reread on it. So the one we're talking about today is The Hellfire Club by a very well-known horror writer, Peter Straub or Straub. I'm not actually sure how to pronounce that. You would think that I would because I've read like most of his books and stuff. But yeah, this one's got this nice... I hate when they print that like right on the book. Look how tacky and ugly that is. That just, I don't know. That drives me crazy. But I don't know. So originally this book came out, I think in 1996. Yeah, at least I don't know if it came out in hardback first or whatever. Probably because Peter Straub is kind of like well known and everything. Although I'm pretty sure that I didn't read it until several years later. Now, like I said, I remember I read it probably in the early 2000s, and I remember liking it but not loving it, and I couldn't really remember what it was about. I think, again, this happens to me a lot. I don't, maybe just because I read a lot, but I thought, like, when I started reading it, I was like, oh, because it's called The Hellfire Club, I was maybe thinking about this other book, and I can't think of what it is, that was sort of, that I was thinking about, like, sort of along those same lines. Because I will say, in its kind of, like, as a detrimental kind of thing, the title is The Hellfire Club, but it really doesn't have anything to do much with a hellfire club, like, maybe like you're thinking. It's not, like, an occult type of thing. It's actually... It's weird because it's almost kind of like genreless. It's not genreless, but I think it's like kind of a mashup of genres. It's kind of like a literary mystery, but then it's kind of like a crime thriller, like a serial killer type of situation also. So it's kind of like, I don't know, and it's like very, much like his novella that I reviewed a little while back, which I didn't love, which is called Mrs. God. This is also kind of based around the literary world, or kind of like the upper middle class Connecticut kind of people, and like in publishing and stuff like that. So maybe that's why I can't like connect with the characters as much, just maybe because, I don't know, these are like kind of upper middle class people with all these upper middle class problems, and I'm just kind of like, okay. Although in this one, it's there actually is like a serial killer running around, and there is like some other, and I do like literary mysteries. In fact, a recent book that I reviewed called The Magpie Murders, which I think only came out like a couple years back, I kind of feel like if you liked that, you would probably like this older one as well, because it has like a similar sort of vibe to it. It's very layered, it's very complicated, there's a lot of like plot threads that you really have to pay attention to them, because a lot of them are interconnected. And it's quite a long book. I mean, it's not long, but it's like 500 odd pages. And there's a lot of stuff going on. So you really kind of have to be sort of on the ball with all the characters and what the situations are and all this other kind of stuff. So basically what we have going on, this is kind of like some background of the story. But back in 1938, there was this sort of writer's retreat type of place called Shorelands. And there was a bunch of writers that were there during the summer of 1938. And apparently, like, something bad happened. Like, one of the women that was there disappeared, and nobody knew where she ended up. Now, even though most of the writers that were there at the time didn't really amount to much of anything, there was one guy there named Hugo Driver, who sort of came out of nowhere, and he ended up publishing this book called Night Journey, which was like a fantasy novel, and it ended up being like this massive, massive success. So much so that it was almost kind of like a Lord of the Rings kind of situation, where like people would read it and they'd become like obsessed with it, and they'd have like, that, you know, that he was talking about, there were driver houses where people would live there, and they would just like dress up like the characters and all this other kind of stuff. So people were like super, super into it. So he wrote that, and he got like really famous. So all that happened back in 1938. I think there's like a little bit of like a prologue that takes place back in 1938, but mostly it takes place in the present day. And we're just kind of like given glimpses of stuff that was going, because it's basically about somebody investigating sort of what happened at Shorelands back then. That's kind of like the through line, or kind of like the main, I guess, the incident that everything else like springs from, but they don't like go, he doesn't go like a really lot into that. So our main protagonist is a woman named Nora Chancel, And she's married to this dude named Davey, who is, I guess his family business is Chancel House, which is like a publishing house. And they were the ones that published Night Journey by Hugo Driver. And it's kind of like they're only, it's like a smaller publishing house. So this book and its two subsequent sequels, which is kind of a big plot point, are kind of their main big sellers. So Davey, I think like his grandfather maybe started the publishing company, and then like, you know, it was his dad, and then like he's not running it now because his dad is still alive, but he's kind of working there. While all this stuff is going on too, with the stuff about Hugo Driver and Night Journey and the stuff with Shorelands and everything like that, also in the Connecticut suburb where they live, there's also been like a serial killer going around killing, and I believe at the beginning of the book, he's killed like 4 victims. And the victims are always the same. They're always like middle-aged, very, very successful businesswomen who lived alone. And he usually like cuts them all up, and it's like a horrific scene and everything like that. So everyone's kind of freaking out, like in this sort of small community, seeing who's going to be next or whatever. Now, near the beginning of the book, there seems to be what is another attack on a very close friend of Nora's. Now, the weird thing about this, though, is that even though her bedroom is just like covered with blood, there is no body there. So they're not entirely sure if she got murdered or just kidnapped. It would seem that there's so much blood there that she can't still be alive. But, you know, so it's very unclear what's going on. So Nora and Davey, because they're friends of this, you know, of the disappeared woman, whose name I think is Natalie. I can't remember. There's a lot of characters in this, and I've like lost track of some of their names. But I think her name is Natalie. I'll just call her that, whether that's her name or not. But so since they were friends of hers, and since they had kind of seen her, police get involved, and they're kind of asking them for any information or whatever. So as it goes on, though, something very strange happens. Natalie, the woman that they thought had been murdered because her room was all covered with blood, she actually turns up alive, but she seems like she's not super in her right mind. And she basically straight up accuses Nora of kidnapping her and hurting her. So at this point, Nora's just kind of like, pretty sure I didn't do that, but you know what I mean? But I guess the woman's like super convincing. It turns out later that Nora did maybe have a motive for doing that. And it's like, and the way that, even though this is not in the first person, it's pretty much all from Nora's point of view. And she has a weird, she was like a nurse in Vietnam. And she had kind of like an affair with it wasn't an affair because I don't think she was married, or I don't remember if he was married or whatever, but they kind of had a fling like back then, he was a doctor. And so he kind of plays into the thing later on too. But because of this horrible thing that happened to her, she was raped by a guy in Vietnam, not the guy she was seeing. It was like just this random dude. And she has a lot of PTSD from it. It's really weird because I kind of feel like the first third of this book, the theme of this book seems to be this poor woman, like at the middle of this, like every dude like in this fucking book just turns out to be like, pretty much all of them turn out to be complete pieces of shit, except like maybe one or two like turn out okay, but everybody turns out to be like a piece of shit in some way or another. Even her husband, who was kind of an innocuous sort of dude, but he's sort of like, you know, he's sort of like a wet noodle, and he's very, very gaslighty in the sense that even though she's been behaving, like one thing that was really striking to me is that even though she's been behaving like pretty normally, like for the first third of the book, like she's got like some issues, but everybody's got issues. Like nothing, you know, screams at you like, oh my God, she's a crazy woman. But then like there's this big confrontation where her husband is basically like, you're a crazy person. And, you know, you've been like saying all this crazy shit in your sleep and you need to go. And she's just like, I don't really know what's going on. So at some point it's almost kind of like when Natalie comes back and like accuses her of kidnapping her, it's almost kind of like, yeah, pretty sure I didn't do that. But she's like, wait, did I? And maybe I just didn't remember. So it's like, she's kind of been like gaslit and like kind of messed up for so long that it's like, she almost like considers that maybe I did do that and just didn't remember. So it's that kind of thing. So this whole brouhaha goes on. Her husband, I think maybe sort of halfway thinks she maybe did it. There's one cop that thinks she didn't, but most of the other cops, like the FBI comes in and everything, because they think, like I said, this is another victim of this serial killer that's been going around. But then as it turns out, she is at the police station one day. I believe she's actually being arrested for it because they find, like, you know, she had a motive and all this other kind of stuff, which, you know, you'll see how it is. Like, she didn't know she had a motive when it actually happened. It was like a motive after the fact, if that makes any sense. But yeah, so she has to go to the police station. They arrest her. And while she's there, they're transferring, they've caught the serial killer. His name is Dick Dart. And they've determined, because Natalie, the victim, is still alive, and she wasn't one of his victims and all this other stuff. So they're transferring Dick Dart to somewhere else, and he busts out and ends up kidnapping Nora and, like, just, you know, taking her at gunpoint or whatever. And so for a long portion of the book, probably, okay, so, like, the first third of it, probably, or the first quarter of it, is kind of, like, build up and, like, stuff about Shorelands, and then Davy, her husband, telling her about the stuff that happened back then, like Shorelands and the Hellfire Club and this girl that he knew that was super weird, and, you know, there's just this weird place that they went, which, like I said, doesn't factor hugely into the story, but it is kind of in there. Which, like I said, I'm not really sure why he called it the Hellfire Club, because even though a couple of clubs like that, like Hellfire Clubs, are brought up, it's not super entwined with the plot, or at least not in a way that I was super cognizant of. So, you know, just say that going, because it sounds like the title sounds a lot cooler. Or it's not so much that, it's just that I think the title is a little bit deceptive, because the Hellfire Club doesn't have a huge amount to do with what's going on in the story. So the first part of it is kind of like all set up, you know, establishing kind of how douchey Davy is, like how strained the relationship is between, not only between Davy and Nora, but also between them and Davy's parents, because there's one whole thing about, like, him being adopted, maybe, and some other, and he's, like, feels inadequate, and his dad's kind of a shit to him, because he feels like he's never good enough, and then Nora gets on his ass because he never stands up to his dad. His dad's, like, kind of a shithead. And also, the mom is kind of, like, a little bit wacky, and she has written this novel, and Nora, like, ends up reading it, and it's this crazy novel. Like, it's just crazy. And so there's a lot of, like, so like I said, I know I'm, like, maybe not describing this adequately, because this is a very complex story. It has, like, a lot of moving parts. So this is definitely one that you're gonna need to, you know, sit down and, like, read it, because you really have to keep track of, like, all the plot tendrils and what's going on and how everything connects to one another, because it's not immediately obvious. So at the point where Nora gets kidnapped by the serial killer, Dick Dart, at that point it almost becomes like a black comedy, but it's almost kind of like a road movie type of thing, but like a crime thriller, because Dick Dart, like, decides that he's going to, you know, he's like, I want to say, like, I've seen some reviews, like, that were kind of comparing him to Hannibal Lecter, which he sort of is. He's a little bit over the top. He's kind of one of those dudes, like, one of his things that, like, really that, like, really made me, like, hate him a lot was that, one, he's one of those dudes, he has, like, a photographic memory. He super, like, knows everything. He's really, like, really intuitive. So it's like he can, yeah, so in that way, yeah, he's kind of like Hannibal Lecter, where he, like, kind of knows what you're thinking or whatever. So he kind of knows that. But he has, like, a lot of, even though he doesn't look that great himself, like, I guess he's, like, sort of handsome, but he's kind of, like, pudgy or whatever. But he has, like, some very definite ideas as to what women should look like. And he doesn't like it that Nora's not ugly, they don't say that, but she's just not, she doesn't have, like, a lot of patience for doing, like, really frou-frou feminine stuff. Like, she's a little bit of a tomboy type character, not over the top type of tomboy, but she just, you know, she doesn't, like, care about getting her nails done or anything like that. And Dick Dart is just, like, not having it. So basically this whole time he, like, makes her, like, while they're on the run, because, like I said, they're both on the run. He has escaped because he's an accused serial killer, and she's an accused kidnapper, so she can't really call the cops because she's afraid she's going to go to jail too. And also, he's, you know, will kill her and cut her into pieces if she does something that he doesn't like. So he, like, goes and buys her all of these new clothes, and it's like he does her hair, and, like, she just does, like, all of this grooming and, like, puts makeup on her because she doesn't like to wear makeup and all this other kind of shit. And it's just, like, this insane. And, of course, like, he rapes her multiple times, and it's just this whole fucking shit show. So they're kind of on the road for a while, too. Now, the thing about how the serial killer thing ties in with the literary mystery type thing about Hugo Driver and Night Journey and the stuff that happened at the writer's retreat back in 1938 is that the serial killer, he wants to do something like he's trying to bump off anybody, because there, I guess, like, one of the central things is that there's some kind of question over whether Hugo Driver actually wrote Night Journey or not, or whether he actually stole the story from another writer, like, back then. But because Hugo Driver is, you know, he who has since passed away, is, like, this big, you know, is such a moneymaker, like, for the Chancel House Publishing Company, which, like I said, Nora and her husband's whole family is involved in, there's kind of a thing where they don't really want, if he did steal the manuscript, which, like I said, is in doubt, then they don't really want that getting out. So the serial killer is kind of tied into, because he's sort of, like, killing people that maybe knew something about what happened back then, because he doesn't want, like, the real thing coming out. So there's, like, a whole situation around that. Now, like I said, this is a very complex story. It's very, I mean, if you've read any Peter Straub, I've read, like, a lot of his books, he has a very particular, very literary kind of style. So if you're not super down with that, then this might just, like, seem like a big slog to you, because it's not, I mean, his prose is not real ornate. I mean, it's not, you know, there's not, like, a lot of unnecessary stuff, really, but he does kind of, like, try hard to, like, establish a mood. He has a lot of sort of literary allusions. He has a lot of connections that you sort of have to make yourself, that, you know, that he doesn't really hold your hand through. So, as I said, his books are kind of, like, not for everyone, because they're, you know, they're a commitment to read. You can't, it's not just a real breezy, like, beach read where you just kind of skim through it and be like, yep, that was good, whatever. That said, this is not my favorite book of his. That would still probably be a Ghost Story. I have a couple of his other ones, just over there in the TBR pile, that I've read before that I remember really liking. I think In the Night Room and maybe Lost Boy, Lost Girl. And I remember really liking those as well. I think the thing about this one, though, it's like I feel like I liked it when I read it, but I did feel like back in early 2000s or whenever it was. But another thing, too, is I kind of feel like I remember thinking back then, why is this called the Hellfire Club? Because I was thinking it was going to be about, like, Hellfire Clubs in general, and it's not really. Like, there's only a few mentions of a Hellfire Club, or, like, you know, one or two of them, and it doesn't have a lot to do with the main plot. It just, so it almost kind of seemed like a side, just like a something that was mentioned a couple times, and then, so I feel like the title was a little bit of you know, a misnomer. But it's weird, because I feel like I liked it more the first time I read it. Like, this time around, like, I liked it, but there were times when I was kind of like, man, come on, let's, like, get on with it. And it just, it's, I didn't remember anything about it, so I didn't really, like, remember where it was going or what was going on. So I had totally forgotten about, like, the whole kidnapped by a serial killer and then getting horribly, like, raped and stuff. You know, I had forgotten about that aspect of it. And I had just, you know, I remembered, like, the literary mystery thing, but I didn't really remember the serial killer thing so much. But I did like the sort of character arc of Nora. I liked her character a lot, although she's, it's weird because I liked her character, but I do kind of feel like she's still at arm's length, like, from the reader, if that makes any sense. Like I said, I kind of feel like, because this isn't super spelled out, like, in the book, but the impression I got of her was that because she had been a nurse in Vietnam, because she had seen, and because she had been raped in Vietnam, and because she'd seen all these horrible things, she had almost kind of, like, turned off her emotions, you know what I mean? So she was almost kind of, like, had gone dead inside. And so it's almost kind of like, as the story goes on, it's, she becomes more in touch with her emotions and more willing to deal with her trauma and her past and everything like that, and kind of finds her inner strength type of thing. Like I said, it's not real obvious, but that did seem to be, like, a big through line of her character. And I actually did really like that, because I think she's a really well written character. I think, like I said, a big theme of the book too is just, like, how all the men in her life have treated her, like, her entire life. Just in different, like, shitty in different ways. Like I said, not everybody Like, she does have some, you know, a couple of male friends in there that are fine, but most of the, like, her husband, her father-in-law, you know, obviously Dick Dart, the serial killer, like, everybody, you know, is shitty to her in their own ways, and it's almost kind of like the through line of the plot, like, of her character is coming to terms with how to, like, stand on her own two feet and not let that happen again, or, you know, not let men treat her that way. That's not a screamingly obvious thing, but if you read the book and really kind of get into it, you can see that that's kind of what one of the main themes is. But as I said, this is, I didn't love it this time. And like I said, I think I liked it better the first time I read it than this time, because a few times it was a little bit of work to get through, but it is like a good book overall. Not my favorite of his, which, like I said, is still a ghost story. I don't think I've ever read anything of his that I liked more than that, but it's still like a decent read if you really like complex stories that are sort of like a genre mashup. You know what I mean? Because this is kind of like a literary mystery, the whole thing about Hugo Driver. Did he really write that book? Did he steal it from somebody? What happened at Shorelands back then with that writer that disappeared? You know, what's going on with all that? And it's also a pretty gruesome serial killer kidnapping crime thriller road trip type of thing too, like halfway. So it's kind of an interesting amalgamation of those two genres. So if that sounds like something that you would be into, I didn't really spoil it too much other than, you know, giving you, because I feel like the text on the back, like I said, and I think I said this before in like some of my other reviews, but it's always like the text on the back is always like vague enough that, you know, but sometimes after you've read the book and then you read the text on the back, you're like, that's not really what the book was about. I mean, it kind of is, but it's hard to like condense a story this complex into like a couple of sentences. So I get that it's hard to write like book blurbs and everything like that, because you'd really want to like condense the essence down. And like I said, something like this that is a mixture of different genres and is also really, really complicated and has like all of these crazy plot threads that are all sort of interconnected like a big huge web, you know, that can be hard to distill down into like a real pithy, you know, paragraph like on the back of a book. So I get it, but I'm just saying that don't be fooled by it being called the Hellfire Club. It doesn't really have a lot to do with that. And don't take the text on the back, or, you know, the descriptive text that's on Amazon or whatever, don't take that as like, oh, that's really what the book is about. It's marginally what the book is about, but there's a whole bunch of other shit going on in there too. So just know that going in. So yeah, but it was still a decent read. I didn't like it as much this time as I did the first time, but it was still really good. And I really got into some parts of it, especially once she got kidnapped by the serial killer. That was probably the best part. But yeah, so check it out if you've read it. If you like Peter Straub, let me know in the comments and we'll have like a little discussion about it. And that will do it for this Tomes of Terror, and I will see you guys on the next one. Bye.